Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and over the last 18 months, I've had the privilege of sharing with you, the listener, the coaching journeys of numerous educators from around the globe. Feedback from listeners has been very encouraging. And as we continue with the Stories from the Field series, we are adding in an extra treat over the coming months. This episode today is the first in a new mini-series called Stories from the Coaches, where we're shifting the spotlight onto those who train the educators to become exceptional coaches. Join me as I sit down with some of our own GCI team to explore their unique perspectives on developing coaching cultures in schools. Let's learn from their experiences of empowering school leaders and teachers to bring about positive change and transformative coaching practices in schools. To kick things off in today's first episode, I'm delighted to welcome Dan Steele. Dan is a seasoned educational leader responsible for GCI's growth in Victoria and Tasmania. With a diverse background in government, Catholic and independent schools, in metropolitan Melbourne and remote Western Australia, he's passionate about fostering learning cultures, developing leaders, and using coaching to drive educational improvement. Today, we have the privilege of delving into his wealth of experience and insights into building coaching cultures in schools. Dan, it's a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Lovely to be here, Richard. Thank you.
Dan, can you share your personal journey and experience in transitioning from education to joining the team at GCI?
How long do we have? No, I was just going to say also thank you for that. That's a. I feel like there's a bit of pressure with that amazing introduction. That was. It's funny when you hear it back. No, thank you. It's really great to be able to chat. I guess so. Thinking of the journey as well with teaching and moving into leadership. I never considered moving into educational leadership. I just sort of jumped into teaching. I loved classroom teaching, and I guess. As I moved through my career, I started to realize that I could extend that impact. Instead of working with that classroom of 30 students that I had, I started to see, if I could help our team get even better at doing things, suddenly we could extend that up to, 90, 120 kids. And then I started seeing that difference that could happen when you start to do it across a whole school. You start to extend it. So for me, the journey started with realizing that I still didn't think that I wanted to. I didn't think of myself as a leader, but what I did see was just trying to help people do things a little bit differently or do things, realize what they were doing that worked really well, and to consider how they're doing that or just become a bit more intentional. So I jumped into school leadership. I was very lucky. I got to take on different roles that involved like running whole school learning and teaching. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I seem to do this when I talk about learning, teaching, putting my hands up in the air. But really it was, I really loved the leadership aspect of when you get to help people, the leaders and the teachers have aha moments. So often teachers talk about loving aha moments in classrooms, and I realized I loved giving them aha moments. So not that I dealt it and I did it, but I realized when I don't have to know everything and I can just ask some great questions and then listen, pretty much tell myself, just shut up, Dan, you don't need to talk. Suddenly they would get these insights or they'd realize they were doing things. And so I realized, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is pretty great, this thing. And then I had this amazing principal who started talking about this thing called coaching. Now, I come from a sports background, and so I was like, okay, so what, we're going to like just yell and tell people what to do? And it very quickly became, no, this principal was amazing. He said, look, Dan, I'd actually like you to coach me, because if I want our leadership team to do it, I have to make sure I do it too. So I remember sitting down and I engaged in these coaching conversations.
Yes.
And I quickly realized it was just learning conversations and really great time and space to think. So for me it was that moment when I realized, I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And I had a word to, I was like, oh, it's coaching. It's about coaching. I loved mentoring. I love supporting and developing people. So I guess from transitioning from education to joining the team at GCI, I became an assistant principal at a primary school. And from the very beginning, my whole aim was just to support and develop and grow our upcoming leaders. Yeah. So people that maybe had never thought about leading, get them to start to think about maybe becoming leaders, and then really focus on building our current leaders. And I just brought a coaching approach. So we would have formal conversations every now and then, every like fortnight or weekly or every 3 weeks, depending on the leader. And then we'd have our informal chats. And so I was loving that, because my whole thing was, if we can build up those people, the whole school will benefit. And we, you know, eventually, after multiple years as well, before I even got there, it led to us at the end of 2022 actually winning this Education Excellence Award as part of the work we did across three schools. So for me, it was really powerful. And I was in the middle of that work, and this job popped up for GCI. And they said, if someone wants to come and lead and manage the Victorian and the Tasmanian team. And I thought, oh, my God. So if I think of extending my impact, if I can go work with more schools, more leaders, more teachers across two states, I'd be silly not to do that. So my wife and I had a big chat. She said, you'd be silly not to do this. So there's that moment of, I'd regret it if I never did it. So I threw my hat in the ring, and I was very lucky to be able to come out the other side and have this role. And I've continued to get to do that work. So I think I've just clocked over a year with GCI now, so in this role as managing consultant for Victoria and Tassie. And when I think of the work that I do now, every week I'm still doing the same work I did in schools. So it's having those really high quality coaching sessions with teachers or with leaders. You know, I'm facilitating professional learning, supporting the team. Like, I get to work and support a team of coaches or, you know, leaders across our team of about 26 people. So for me, I'm still getting to do the stuff that I always did. It just looks a little bit different. And I do often, I'm normally working from home, so my office is a little bit different and maybe doesn't have as many kids running in and out. But, yeah, I think that for me, that's been the core part of that journey, that transition from being in schools and moving in to join GCI.
It's a lovely story, Dan, and just listening to you as you explain it, I love that idea of gradually extending your impact. So starting off with the classroom and the teaching, which obviously you had a real passion for in those early days, but thinking about how do I extend this impact over a greater number of people, taking on that leadership role. And you mentioned something there, Dan, which I've actually written down here, which I think is just terrific. When you talk about leadership, when I don't have to know everything, that's a lovely way to think about leadership. And, you know, it's a lovely segue into the whole coaching world, because as coaches, we're moving into that conversation and we don't have to know everything. And I suppose it's lovely when you talk about that whole idea of the aha moments. And then when the GCI, I suppose, role came up, and listening back there, Tan, always take advice from your wife. Never go against the grain.
Absolutely.
So you've had that conversation and you've taken that big leap of faith to move in with the GCI team. And I'm sure, again, that reach has extended to even more people now. And I'm sure those people are very grateful that you've actually done that. Now, from what you would sort of describe as very sort of humble startings and very humble background, you've moved into a position of leadership. What specific skills or insights from your background in education have you found most valuable in your current role?
When I think of, so I go immediately, I'm immediately drawn to being in my class, like in class teaching. So when I think of lessons that went really well, there was less of me and more of the learners. So I used to love that moment when you'd be teaching and the kids were actually, that moment when instead of you doing ask and then they answer you, and they look and their eyes literally look at you as they're answering the question, it was suddenly I could step back and the kids engaged in real dialogue. So they were actually, and they were agreeing, they were disagreeing, or they were taking this real ownership of their learning. And I remember, it's pretty, like, it's not that it's rare, but there's times when you realize there's a really great moment happening and being able to stand back and just watch the learning unfold. So for me, the specific skills that have really helped is the ability, I guess, like, to think of being humble. So it's not about me. I think Christian Van Nieuwenberg says that's his mantra, it's not about you. He talks about when he's coaching. So for me, it was about the ability to be humble and try and make sure that you're stepping back. The amazing skills that teachers have, really great teachers and really good teachers, they're really adept at noticing. So they'll notice themselves in the moment, what they're doing, is it working? They'll also notice, are things landing for the kids? So they'll adapt what they're doing based on what the students are seeing. So if we think of the work that we do in coaching, when I'm coaching someone, I'm looking to see if the question I ask, does it land well? What's their body language like? So that's all transferred from teaching. And obviously a key one for me too is I love open-ended questions. So I realized really early on in my career, I had a mentor that said to me, I think maybe you need to consider doing some more open-ended questions. And then I happened to, we recorded a video and it was just all these closed questions. There was no wait time. There was no thinking time. So for me, I remember just the transferable skill as well as that ability of bringing across really open-ended questions and giving that space and that quiet and the slight awkward silence you get when you hold
yes.
a really long pause.
Again, this is terrific, Dan. I've written down another line here. When you reflect back right to the very start of your teaching days, the best lessons were when there was less of me and more of them, which is a lovely picture of the classroom, but also a lovely picture of a coaching conversation when there's less of you. Yeah. And more of the coachee. So that's just terrific. And that's going to be really helpful to our listeners. As part of the coach training team, you work with educators who are new to coaching. What would you say is one key principle that you would emphasize during those early stages of training? And how might this benefit not just the educator themselves, but also their students back in school?
Yeah, I think I was really grappling when you said this just now. There's a few different things, but I think I'll come back to that, I guess, that principle of beginner's minds. You know, I think it came from Zen Buddhism. But that idea of just, you know, you're open, you're eager. You think of like any time you're trying to, I think of myself, I've got a 7-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter. They're both trying out basketball right now. Now, they're not the best. But they absolutely exemplify that beginner's mind. They're willing to give it a go and they realize that it's okay not to know some things. So I think when we're in workshops or when we're training people and we're working with people that are interested in coaching, sometimes, you know, you can see they literally tense up and they think that they have to just be nailing the work that they do. And I think sometimes, big generalization, sometimes teachers were way too hard on ourselves. Way too hard. We've got these huge expectations. So for me, it's like if you can bring back a beginner's mind. So if I was beginning this, literally some of them are just beginning it, you know, realize that it's going to feel clunky. You're going to make mistakes. The fact is that you're deliberately trying to practice. You're thinking intentionally about what you're doing. Yeah. You're actually turning up and giving it a go. A lot of people say that they want to do things and then they don't actually do it.
Yeah.
So for me, I think there's a real power in that beginner's mindset that you can bring to just be easy on yourself and be really eager to know that you'll stuff up, but you'll also do things really well.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Dan. And, you know, you can picture that scenario where you're working with somebody new to coaching and you're trying to get across this idea of helping them intentionally develop a beginner's mind. And if they do that and bring that into their classroom, into their practice in school, then their pupils and their colleagues are going to notice that. A bit like you and your daughters, you know, with the basketball, you know, trying to develop a beginner's mind, that's going to be contagious. And other folks are going to use a great coaching term, notice that in how you interact with folks. Could you share a success story where an educator's coaching journey has had a significant impact, not just on their own role, but on the experience of their students?
Yeah, I'm immediately drawn to think of a recent coachee that I've been working with who's a middle leader and new to their leadership. So it was leadership coaching. And a big part that came down to was I feel that when coaching works well, you go, if we picture like the iceberg, it's not as much about, you might start on some surface level stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they turn up and they have a conversation. They think there's a goal they want to work on.
Yes.
And as we, you know, keep having a conversation, we go a bit deeper and we actually realize that this person, they held themselves to a really high account. And they used the word perfect quite a bit. And I tried to use some summarizing and paraphrasing just so, you know, and give them some feedback and say, you know, I'm hearing the word perfect a lot.
Yeah.
And what they realized was they wanted to work on just being, they spoke about being good enough. So when I think of the work about the impact on their role was they cut themselves some slack so that beginner's mind, I guess, in some way, so they realized that it was actually, what does good enough look like? What would I be noticing if I'm doing a good enough job in my role as a leader in managing my team? And what would that look like in my classroom? So we got really clear and they actually started naming what that looks like. And when they named good enough, it was still really amazing because they were thinking really clearly about what they wanted to do. And it really boiled down to a few key aspects about them actually wanting to look at how do they greet their students, how do they engage their students, particularly some of the boys in their class who had been acting up. And they realized that it was just with a few little tweaks to what they were doing, they could actually see a really big shift. So I think for their role, they got clear in their role and what good enough looked like as a leader. In their classroom, they noticed a difference because suddenly those boys who had been acting up weren't acting up as much and were actually really settled because they felt like they were getting connection, they were getting attention. And then an unexpected thing was some of those other kids who were maybe under the radar suddenly started standing out more. So not only did the person feel a bit more confident in their leadership, they saw some change in their classroom. On a personal front, they then started noticing their family were saying how much calmer they appeared as well. So for me, there's a really big success just by that moment when you just say, I've just noticed the word perfect coming up a lot, and then giving them the opportunity to talk that through. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what you're doing as a coach. You're giving them the opportunity to talk that through. And you know, creating an environment in the conversation where you're getting to the point where they're asking themselves, what does good enough look like? Isn't it fantastic that not only is having an impact on their learning, but it's having an impact on their pupils' learning? And here's a third one, which I hadn't even thought about, which you mentioned, Dan. It's having an impact on them beyond the bell. So as far as home goes, you know, family and friends, which is fantastic. Dan, the field of education, as you well know, is constantly evolving. How does your work with GCI adapt to stay relevant and address the changing needs and challenges of educators in today's world?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think first and foremost, because all of us were in schools, we're all educators and educational leaders. I think when we consider the people that work for GCI, if you did the VIA character strengths, I'm pretty sure love of learning would be quite high for most people, as well as curiosity. So I think there's a deep-seated passion for every single person. So for us, what does that mean? That means that we want to stay connected to schools. So for us, I guess it's thinking, how do we know what's changing? Well, we're curious. So by coaching and working with current leaders, current schools, staying really curious and wanting to know what's this actually look like. We hear firsthand what it looks like. Again, that thing around our team's passion and people's passion for education means that they're actually sharing. Like, we'll have team members share different research they've read, articles they're reading, and they want to engage and look at, well, is this whilst the newspapers or the media or researchers say this is a current state, are we seeing that in the schools right now? So they're engaging in that way. So we've got research, we've got the actual stories of practice and, you know, what's it look like on the ground. And then even just within our team, so we've got 26 people across the Victorian and the Tasmanian team. During our professional learning sessions and even the work that we do when we're all talking, we actually talk about the trends and okay. themes that we're seeing across education. So we literally talk about that and we start to say, we share, what are we noticing in schools and are we seeing things that are in common? I'm sure it's probably similar to yourself over there in the UK. You know, post-COVID engagement, attendance, you've got teaching shortages. You know, there's some themes that we're seeing. So for us, as things occurred, schools are really wanting to engage in that wellbeing space and wellbeing for learning. So for us, we started seeing that theme and that trend started rising up and was more prominent for schools. So we started saying, okay, so what do we then need to be aware of as coaches and people when we're working and engaging with them. So I think there's that really key piece around being aware of wanting to stay curious and connected to the people in the schools.
Yeah.
We're playing out that passion by exploring and seeing what the research is saying and staying up to date with those events. And then we're actually just doing the conversations to find out what is it that we're hearing and sharing so that we can see, is that consistent across the schools?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I mean, it's very encouraging for listeners to hear that, you know, those ongoing conversations that you have with your team. And I'd highlighted three things that you mentioned there. Number one, a love of learning. And that's terrific to know that you guys, you know, are having discussions around learning, which is great. The curiosity, and that's going to have to come through. And that's come through very, very clearly today, Dan, in your answer there. And then I think number three here, most importantly, staying connected with those schools. When you talk through that previous answer, could you highlight any recent or maybe upcoming developments, maybe through those conversations that you've picked up in coach training that you think may be particularly beneficial for educators?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing play out is an awareness. There's a raising awareness of senior leaders and also middle leaders. So middle leadership is a really key part. So it's wanting to work out how do you intentionally develop middle leaders. That's a core thing that's coming through. And within that is you're a really good teacher. So you get identified as, oh, you know what, maybe we'll move, you could be a team leader or you might start to be a curriculum leader. So you move into a middle leadership role.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you then know how to lead and support and develop others. So I think for me, there's a piece around there about training, developing middle leaders to bring a coaching approach to their leadership. So I think leaders as a coach or coaching in leadership, so bringing that way of leading is a really key piece that I think is going to emerge. I think we're continuing to see it happen. I mean, we launched the coaching in leadership course the start of this year. That's when it first really took off. And already the thing that we're having, the feedback we're getting from people is it makes sense. It frees you up. It takes that weight off your shoulders because when you bring a coaching way of to your leadership,
yeah,
you don't have to know all the answers and your job's to actually build up and question and ask others.
Yeah.
And it's not easy, but it's that first step. So I think there's a really big piece there about leaders bringing that coaching way of leading. And then I think another one, so that's from a leadership front. And then from a pedagogical or instructional front, I think there's a really big step that's happening in developing playbooks. So around schools getting really, really clear about what are the core teaching practices that we know can best help our students with their learning and their well-being, and getting really clear on, so what's that small curated list that we say is pretty much like our foundation to ensure success for our teachers and our students. And I think those are really growing in prominence because we want to put everything on the in the playbook. We can't put everything in there, but we want to get really clear about what are the core things. So I think schools are really starting to go with that. So you've got those structures and processes and that way of leading is bringing coaching to your way of leading. And at the same time, you're starting to think about, well, how can we build up and develop those core practices that we know can make a difference?
Yeah. Now that's super useful, Dan. And I mean, definitely our listeners will appreciate that. Whenever you're talking through that previous answer, and I suppose there's a number of things coming to mind. One thing I've been really keen on throughout the last maybe 18 months on the podcast, particularly talking to principals and school leaders, specifically thinking about coaching, is that we could very easily present this ideal world where everything's rosy and everything's straightforward and there's these wonderful people doing wonderful things. And there are people doing wonderful things, but you know something that's really important for our listeners to know, it doesn't always work perfectly the first time. So what I would love to ask you, Dan, is are there common obstacles or maybe even misconceptions that educators encounter when they're transitioning into these coaching roles? And maybe you could share with us, you know, how do you assist them in overcoming these challenges?
The two that I'm immediately drawn to are we have models of what we think a coach is, you know, so when you're going into something new, so for me, you know, I played basketball, I was a swimmer, and I played rugby. So my coaches, it was really directive coaching. So it was, here's the next thing you need to do, do this, keep practicing, and then I had a couple that used video to then help me see, but it was really they then told me if I had done it well enough.
Okay.
And then, you know, okay, on to the next thing. So I think a lot of us have that model of that's what a coach does.
Hmm.
So the misconception is that you, as a coach, your job's to tell everyone what to do. So I think a way to go to your question about how do you help them overcome that obstacle, sometimes it's about asking a question of, well, what's it like to be on the other side of you? Or to ask who's doing most of the thinking and the heavy lifting in the conversation. So if you're the one doing all the heavy lifting and thinking, I'm like, Richard, all you need to do is this, 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 great, okay, great. Then hopefully if someone's quite aware, they start to realize, oh, hang on, maybe Richard didn't do that much talking or thinking. I did a lot. Maybe I wonder what would happen if next time when I show up, if it's a little bit different. So I think for me, that's one aspect when thinking about it's not about giving and doling out the advice and it's not about you being the one that has the high status. The other one I think too is the second one is a really big obstacle, and I went down this and massively stuffed up the first time I engaged it was I'm like, everyone should do coaching. Guys, I've discovered it, this thing. It's brilliant. Everyone should do it. Let's just do it all at once. And so I think from a change management perspective and bringing that partnership approach, you know, Jim Knight is so big. The work that he's done over the last 20 plus years is all about how do you bring a longer term focus on those partnership principles of walking along beside people and starting really small. So whilst in my coaching roles or people engage in their coaching roles, they might want to engage and get as many people getting coached. Start really small and think, who are your champions? Who are the people that you would foresee knocking on your door first and foremost saying, oh, my gosh, I've heard about this coaching thing. Can I get involved? And maybe you start with them. And then, you know, you build up. So you want it, you've got your vision of where you want to get to. But I guess, well, what are the first steps that you need to take? Because there's a lot of obstacles and there's a lot of learning and a lot of mistakes and a lot of successes that will happen when you get there, or you might not ever fully get to that vision. But if you start really small and you just keep building on with those tiny steps of progress, I think that's key.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful for our listeners, Dan, and I suppose encouraging for folks, because we can just tear off down the middle expecting everything to happen tomorrow and with the very best intentions, but we need to slow down. And as you say, you know, small steps but going in a very solid intentional direction is the way to go about it. So that's really, really helpful.
I used to have in my office, I had a whiteboard that was facing the door, so when people came in, and I would sit and face it, and I had to write really big across the top of it, go slow to go fast. For two reasons. One was so when they walked in, they would see it, but it was really to remind me because, you know, a lot of us, we're probably pretty passionate. We get excited and we want to jump in, but it always comes back to that. And then that would also help me because people would always point up and say, all right, that's right, we're trying it. We've got to go slow before we can go fast.
That's going to be written up on so many offices tomorrow as soon as we've released this episode, Dan, right across the globe. We're leading by example. Dan, as someone who has coached educators through various stages of their careers, can you share insights into the personal growth that educators can expect from embracing coaching as part of their skill set?
When it works really well, I think you just walk, you get a clear understanding of who you are. You know, when you embrace coaching as part of your skill sets, I think you just get a clearer understanding, clearer knowledge of you, what you actually value, the things that are important to you. When you embrace coaching and so you lean into it and you're open and you know, if someone asks you a question, you actually engage it, and then they say, and what else? Or, you know, what makes you say that? You start to identify these attitudes that you hold, or maybe you didn't realize you held. You start to notice and you become more aware of an understanding of your strengths and strengths that you never heard. I'm sure you've been in a conversation where someone's said something to you in a different way and you go, oh, okay. So I think for me, growth in understanding your values, your attitudes and your strengths. And then I think a really important skill set that over the last few years that I've really, really has resonated for me is based on that hope theory. So, you know, really great coaching, when it works really well, you actually bring this skill set of being a hope thinker. So, you know, based on that hope theory of you get clear on identifying a goal or goals, and they could be really big or they could be quite small. But so you build up your ability to think with hope. And I don't just mean in vague, fuzzy sense. I mean, you work out really clear goals. You actually can then see the pathways to get there. So coaching helps you work out those small steps, those little actions, or those things you just need to keep doing to build a habit.
Yeah.
And therefore, when you get clear goal, you get some steps and pathways to be able to get there, you start to believe you can get it. So I think, you know, when we think of hope theory, they're the three key things to foster hope, which therefore leads to further action and success. So I think coaching, if you can start to build up that ability and that skill set to identify goals, work out pathways, and then foster your self-belief, that's pretty amazing. That's the thing that really draws me. And I love watching over time as coachees or, you know, thinking partners, they start to really build up their hope. I think on a personal front, you suddenly build up skills to build more meaningful relationships. So you listen to people, but you actually hear what they're saying too.
Yes.
So, you know, you might listen, but if you're not hearing what they're saying or what's not being said, you know, that's a little bit different to being able to listen and hear people. Particularly, you know, I just watch the way my wife will sometimes say, you're not coaching us. I'm like, no, I'm definitely not. But you know, I bring a coaching approach now to the way I parent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and sometimes I watch my daughters, they get really disappointed or upset about something, and instead of trying to distract them with some, I don't know, some food or like something that's really nice, I'll just, it sounds like it's really tough right now. And we just sit in there and go through that together. And then, you know, after about 30 seconds, they say, okay, so can we go wrestle? Like, oh, yep, okay, great. And then I think a really big one, if I can reiterate it for anyone that's a leader, is embracing coaching will empower you to realize that you don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a huge thing. I think watching and having been a middle leader, a senior leader, and engaging with all these people, when you take the weight of that off your shoulders and from around your neck, that's pretty freeing. So I think for those, they're the big ones. When I think of that, they're the things I come down to.
A fantastic list, Dan, and really helpful for our listeners. We're going to use a similar sort of recipe of questions for most of the GCI folk on this mini-series. And this last question, I think, is going to be a really interesting one. What do you think might be the next big thing in coaching and education?
Ooh. Do I just have to have one, Richard? This is the thing, just one? I've got two, but I can only, I'll do one if you just want me to do one.
I'm happy with two. Go for two.
I mean, look, we spoke about it before, so I'll briefly just, I think it's leader as a coach, so coaching in leadership that way. People, leaders being able to bring a coaching approach to who they are, but also the way that they engage their teams and the structures and processes in a school. So that we've sort of briefly spoken about that. And then the other one that I think is having worked in a school most recently as assistant principal, we had a lot of kids that came in with quite a high degree of trauma. And the power that I saw was when you get trauma-informed practices and really research-informed and evidence-based engagement strategies. So, you know, like clear routines and, you know, even like ways that you greet students at the door, you get really clear about what works, what doesn't work. If you combine that with instructional coaching, it benefits every single child. So I see instructional coaching focused on engagement strategies and probably embedding some trauma-informed practices. So getting schools sharing the ways that you can engage kids and really manage classrooms so that they can be really successful so kids are ready to learn. I see that as something that's going to come post-COVID, because of the way that we're seeing that well-being for learning is really increasing, and schools are saying they really want to engage in that space. So, yeah, I see a really clear connection to those engagement strategies, trauma-informed practices, and instructional coaching.
And what I love about that second part of that answer, Dan, is ultimately the focus is on pupils, you know, which is what we're about. You know, we're about coaching in education. And when we peel off all of the layers, essentially what we're trying to do is be intentional about improving the practice in our schools, ultimately to improve the experience of the pupils in our schools. So that's been really helpful, and the way you've set that out has been superb. Dan, this has been a great episode. I have found your story both intriguing and inspiring, and I want to thank you for sharing your journey with us today. This, as you know, is the first of our series of stories from the coaches, and it certainly has delivered, Dan. You've set the bar very high indeed. For our listeners, I'm quite sure that this conversation has been a benefit to you, whether you're an educator interested in coaching or maybe you're involved in coach training in your school. I'm sure you will have gleaned some really useful takeaways from Dan. Please remember to check out the GCI website at growthcoaching.com.au, where you will find further podcast episodes as well as a wealth of other free coaching resources. In the meantime, keep an eye out for future conversations that I'll be having with some of our GCI team as we share more stories from the coaches.